So my topic today is turning the invisible visible. So I have to say, I've always loved the idea of the invisible, even as a child. You know, I mean, it's the world of magic. It's the world of dreams. It's the world of angels and fantasy, right? But just the idea of something beyond this physical beingness that we are. It resonates with me. I know there's more than just this. So I've always been fascinated by exploring that. So this past week, I just kind of kept that in mind as I went through my days to see where the invisible might show up this week. And as some of you know, I'm a hospice chaplain. And of course, my patients are my greatest teachers. And so things show up there a lot. So Vera is in her 80s, living in an assisted living center and with some dementia. And I go for my visit, walk into her room, and she's frantically ransacking the drawers in her dresser and very distracted. I go, Vera, how are you doing? What are you doing? She says, I'm busy. I'm looking for something. I said, oh, well, great. Maybe I can help. What are you looking for? And she says, she looks at me, she goes, well, if I knew that, I would have already found it, wouldn't I? You know, I had to laugh. But then I thought a little bit deeper. You know, what a great metaphor for what we do, right? I mean, we spend our lives searching for we're really not sure what it's going to look like, right? I mean, we have an idea, maybe the perfect job, the perfect mate, maybe something that's going to make us happy. And we continue searching, thinking, well, it will find us, right? Or at least we hope it will. So thank you, Vera, for the reminder. So that's one type of invisible. And then there's another type of invisible, one I'm sure you can relate to, too. Sometimes what's invisible to us is blatantly apparent to others, especially to our loved ones. I'm talking about maybe our flaws, or should we say unhealed aspects or unskilled behavior. Very visible to others, but how blind we are often to them. So another good story I heard about Ernest Holmes. A longtime client of his called him up and said, oh, Dr. Holmes, you have to help me. My husband is driving me crazy. He is so negative. The more I come into this teaching and feel so positive, the more negative he's getting. Would you please see him? Because I'm going to have to divorce him if he keeps doing this. And Ernest Holmes said, of course, have him call me. So 2 days later, the husband does call. Of course, he says, you know, I don't really think I need to see you, so let's just say we saw each other and just get her off my back. And Dr. Holmes says, no, I don't think that's really wise, but tell me about it. And he says, well, I don't see any problem. I am the most positive person I know. I am not negative. I don't know what she's talking about. And Ernest said, well, would you agree to maybe doing a little experiment around that? And just to see, maybe she might have a point, maybe not. And the husband said, okay, all right, what do you need? He said, go to the store and get a big glass bowl and a bag of uncooked beans and take it to your office and put the bowl on the desk with the beans and ask your coworkers and your employees to help you in this experiment that is very important to you. Anytime they hear you say something negative, they're to go into your office, pick up a bean, and put it in the bowl. And the husband says, sure, okay, I'll do it. No problem. Good. Call me in a couple of weeks. We'll see how that goes. Oh, okay. 2 days later, husband calls, laughing, fortunately, and he says, I think we need to meet, Dr. Holmes. My bowl is overflowing. Do I have to go get another bag of beans? Right. Sometimes it takes a bag of beans to make things visible to us. But the story reminds me that change can't even begin until we become aware. right? Until we become conscious. And we talk a lot about consciousness here and what that is. But to be aware, to wake up and dream, as Eileen's saying, we have to be first conscious to make visible the invisible parts of us that are holding us back from that greater expression of ourselves, right? So how do we do that? Well, one of my favorite books is The Six Pillars of Self-Esteem by Nathaniel Brandon. And his first pillar, which is really the foundational pillar that all the others are built upon, is the pillar of living consciously. The pillar of living consciously. And he defines consciousness as a choice. It's a choice we make day by day, moment by moment. The choice to seek awareness or not. The choice to focus our mind or not. He says we can't feel competent and worthy while conducting our lives in a mental fog. Mental fog, I love that image. And can't you relate to that? That sense of living kind of foggy, not really present, not really, really aware. The ways that we're invisible to ourselves. When we evade the truth, when we avoid the truth, when we deny what's out there. These are all parts of the mental fog that he talks about. And he says, living consciously means being on guard against the sometimes seductive pull of the unconscious. And it is so very seductive, isn't it? That pull of the unconscious. And I was thinking about that. One of the reasons is it's so easy to be unconscious. It takes work to stay conscious, to stay aware, right? To be present. It's so much easier to just kind of close down, to just kind of numb out, to kind of operate mechanically and not mindfully at all. Easier also to be confused rather than clear. I often think that mental fog we put around us because it helps us not have to make a decision. As long as we're confused, we can't act. What a card. Yeah. So what's the best way to battle this pull of the unconscious? Brandon says what he calls it the art of noticing. Art of noticing. So noticing things like just noticing your body. You know, how often do we walk around with kind of just our head up? We're not even aware of our body. Little signals that it's giving us. Noticing our emotions and not just putting them aside or ignoring them. Noticing what excites us and what drains us. Right? Noticing the times when we're, ooh, I'm feeling alive. I like this. Versus, ooh, that's draining me. Just noticing. Noticing what I'm doing when I like myself and what I'm doing when I don't like myself. All right? Isn't that an interesting question? What is it? What is it? Ooh, I like myself. What is it that I'm doing? Just to check in. Go, oh, I'm in integrity. But it's all about mindfulness. It's all about staying in the present and being conscious. Brandon also reminds us that our daily trials and tribulations can actually be gifts. Gifts that keep us conscious, that help us to live consciously. He says fear and pain should be treated as signals not to close our eyes, but to open them wider. Not to look away, but to look more attentively. It reminds me of one of my favorite Rumi quotes. It says, don't turn away. Keep your gaze on the bandaged place. That's where the light enters you. Isn't that lovely? That's it. Where our hurt is where we can be present. So that fear and pain invites us to look deeper, to see more, and to discover our bigger self. That's the invitation to open our eyes wider. Because it calls us back to our divine connection. That's what all this is about. Because that's where the present is. The present. The divine connection is here right now within each and every moment. So being fully present for it brings us in to that divine connection. Because when we're confused or afraid or uncertain, we're traveling a road away from spirit. Right? So often, here's the good news, we can use our discomfort as kind of markers on the road. It reminds me of those little, you know, those reflective lane markers on the highway, the little bumps that when you stray out, you bump, 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 you know you're off center. Well, maybe our pain, our discomfort, our fear can act as ways to get us back in line, that showing that we've maybe strayed from our divine purpose and truth. Just little lane marker bumps on our route. And remember, you know, our soul knows what needs to be done, and we can trust that. There's an invisible force within us that's always guiding us, that's always there. It's that internal GPS, that God positioning system. You know, it's a force that's pushing and pressing in to enlarge us. I like the idea of enlarging myself, to call us to be more, to live more, to be more. And the wonderful news is that the supply is there even before the thought is thought. That's the truth, right? Here's how Ernest Holmes describes it. There is life force, an energy and intelligence seeking an outlet through everything. There is an irresistible urge back of everything to create, to express life. There is an emotional craving for self-expression in everything. An emotional craving for self-expression, that's what's in us. Right? And there's this invisible force that stretches out ahead of us and prepares our way. This invisible force, that's what created the visible that we see right now. And it's already moving on. So the image keeps coming to my mind, you know how when it's like a long path, and we only see spirit when we look behind us, when we look at lives and what it's taken to be here. Then we see all these synchronistic ties, and we say, oh, wow, if I hadn't met that person or done that, this wouldn't have happened, and this wouldn't happen. And we get a sense of that invisible path that has been guiding us along, right? That's the invisible in action. And that path stretches out ahead of us, too. So by the time we see the visible, we can know that the invisible is just another step away, is already laying down. It's all part of the plan in that sense. So there's this great scene from one of my favorite movies, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusader. How many of you have seen Indiana? Yeah. This is the one with Sean Connery, and they're looking for the Holy Grail and all that. Yeah. So toward the end of the movie, well, for those of you who haven't seen it, okay, so Jones is searching for the Holy Grail. He's being pursued by the Nazis. He has to find the Grail in order to save his father's life. Okay, synopsis. So toward the end, his search takes him to the sacred cave where the Grail has been guarded for centuries. And, you know, he has to survive these dangerous feats and solve these riddles. And one of the last pieces before he can reach the Grail, he finds himself at a precipice of this seemingly bottomless canyon. And he knows that right on the other side is where the Grail is. And he knows there is a way to get there, but he can't see it. Right? It's too deep to go down. It's too large to leap. He can't go around it, and he has to just trust. And so he closes his eyes, and he takes a step, certain that he's going to just plummet to his death, and yet his foot steps on solid ground. It turns out there's a thin rock bridge that spans the two sides that you can't see because It's like an optical illusion, but it's there. And that image has just held me so much this week, of stepping into what we think is air, and in fact, there's spirit already setting its path. I'm still getting this at a deeper level, even as I speak it. But what a wonderful truth, and what a wonderful image to hold. Because our invisible path is already laid ahead of us. Our next visible step, our next experience, will certainly appear exactly when ready, exactly when we need it. And we can trust ourselves. We can trust ourselves to choose wisely, which is kind of the next part of that. Choosing the right grail. But we can trust ourselves, because to trust us is to trust the universe, because we are one with it. So here's how Ernest Holmes puts it. In this invisible law of unfoldment, we must come to trust. And though we do not see the way, we must believe that the way is and is operative. We must trust the invisible, for it is the sole cause of that which is visible. Wraps up my dog, totally. Okay, I'm going to read it one more time just because it's so powerful. In this invisible law of unfoldment, we must come to trust. And although we do not see the way, we must believe that the way is and is operative. We must trust the invisible, for it is the sole cause of that which is visible. Right. And what strengthens our trust is, of course, our spiritual practice. Our meditation, our prayer, our treatment. The phrase that keeps coming to me over and over again is courting the presence, courting the presence. You know, and Michael, my husband, and I always laugh when we remember back to our courting days, right? The days of the new love. You know, how absolutely delightfully surprised we were with each other and fascinated by each other's stories and where we've been and how we got to where we are and all that. And remember, there's that impatience to see each other again, right? Okay, we still have some of that, but not in the way of courting. But that feeling of open heart love, you know, young love. You all have been there, right? Okay, so here's the question. Imagine having that relationship with spirit. Imagine courting in that way with spirit. Having that same sense of joyful anticipation of what's coming next. You know, what can we create together? Yeah, what a great partnership, huh? It's right there. And the truth is, spirit already feels that way. It's already courting you. We just have to sit and accept it and participate in that courtship. Right? So I want to end with a powerful prayer by Ernest Holmes, just to kind of ground what we've talked about today. So I just invite you to close your eyes and open your heart to these words. Today, I accept the presence of this power. Today, I believe that it is operating in all of my affairs. Today, I accept that there is a divine guidance telling me what to do. Today, I affirm that there is a power that goes before me and prepares the way. I affirm that this power is love and life. I affirm that the divine presence is a presence of joy and happiness. And I affirm that there is something within me that knows what to do under every circumstance, in every situation. And so I deliberately turn from everything that seems confusing, and I no longer listen to that which denies the reality of God within my experience. I let, I believe, and I permit, I believe, and I let, I accept, and I know. And I know. Powerful. So I invite you this week to know that just ever deeper, to court the presence, right, and to remember that Spirit is courting you right back, to stay conscious to your life, and to practice the art of noticing. And finally, just to trust that path. Trust that that path is already laid solidly ahead of you, turning the invisible visible. Thank you.